On behalf of the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, welcome to today's training on green and sustainable remediation. Today's training was developed by the ITRC Green and Sustainable Remediation Team. My name is Juliana Cheatham. I'm coming to you from Moscow, Idaho. I'm going to serve as a moderator on today's call. I'm going to cover introductory material in the next few slides and then turn the presentation over to our trainers from the ITRC Green and Sustainable Remediation Team. As listed on the slide, today's training course is based on the ITRC Technical and Regulatory Guidance Document, Green and Sustainable Remediation, a Practical Framework. Today's training is an introduction to this document, and we encourage you to review the document itself. And we're going to take you to a link at the end of the training where you can download a PDF of the document. We also make available the presentation that you'll see during the training. In addition to what's on the slides in the Clue-In version, in our downloaded versions, we have additional information available in the notes section. So if you would like to have a copy of the presentation, we'll remind you at the end of the training how to access that. Today's training is sponsored by the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, ITRC, and is hosted by the U.S. EPA Cleanup Information Network, CLUIN. Moving to slide two, if you're unfamiliar with this version of CLUIN, it's a series of orange buttons along the top that allow you to navigate. Most often, you're going to use the third button, the single right arrow, to move forward one slide at a time through the presentation. The slide number is listed in the upper left-hand corner. The trainers will say the slide number throughout today's presentation, and each of you in the audience are in control of your own slides. We're scheduled to go 2.25 hours today. We're going to have question and answer breaks, one in the middle and another at the end of today's presentation. For our phone line audience, you are welcome to ask questions out loud, and we'll remind you how to unmute the phone so that you can do that during the question and answer breaks. We do ask that you hold your questions that you ask out loud until those question and answer breaks. Anyone is welcome to use the orange question mark button at any time during today's training to send in a question or a comment. On our last slide, we have a link to our feedback form. We do look for everyone on today's call to fill out that feedback. We really do use the information that you provide and appreciate you taking just a few minutes to give us your feedback. Today's event is being recorded, and we offer archives of over 50 ITRC training classes, and you can visit the ITRC website to learn more. On slide three, at the top of the slide, you can see the URL for the ITRC website. ITRC is hosted by the Environmental Council of States. Overall, ITRC is a network that's led by state regulators. It includes our federal partners, Department of Energy, Defense, and the Environmental Protection Agency, as well as members from industry, academia, and community stakeholders. The full ITRC disclaimer is included in the notes section of this slide and on the ITRC website. ITRC is partially funded by the U.S. government. ITRC nor U.S. government warranty material or endorse specific products. We recommend you check with local, state, and federal laws and experts. ITRC's presentations and documents are copyrighted. More information is available on the ITRC website. We have a wide variety of technical and regulatory guidance documents. We have internet-based and classroom training schedule for all of 2014 available. I do encourage you to visit the website to learn more. On slide four, I'll introduce our trainers for today's class. All trainers were members of the ITRC Green and Sustainable Remediation Team. That team was led by Rebecca Borden of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and Tom O'Neill from the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. Rebecca Borden is hydrogeologist in the Petroleum Remediation Program of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency in St. Paul. She performs technical reviews of petroleum release investigations, corrective actions, and brownfield redevelopment projects. Rebecca is the Green and Sustainable Remediation and Redevelopment Coordinator for the Remediation Division. Jim Comer is the Operations Director at BB&E in Michigan. His work includes advising and conducting green and sustainable remediation assessments for the Air National Guard. Karen Holland is a Senior Sustainability Specialist at Haley & Aldrich in San Diego. She leads the application of sustainability thinking to Haley & Aldrich's remediation services and has assisted multiple clients with sustainable remediation projects throughout the remediation lifecycle. Elizabeth Hawley is a senior environmental engineer with Arcadis in Emeryville, California. She consults on environmental restoration projects involving site characterization, state and transport, modeling, remediation, sustainability analysis, and cost estimating. Maria Watts is a senior program manager at CDM Smith in Edison, New Jersey. She has extensive experience in managing multi-task, multi-discipline programs requiring inter-office coordination as well as agency negotiation. On slide 5, I'll now turn today's presentation over to Rebecca Borden of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Rebecca?
All righty. Thank you, Juliana. All right, with that, we're going to jump right into talking about our topic du jour, our green and sustainable remediation concept today. So we want to extend a particular thank you to any of you who are listening in from abroad. I know we have a great deal of countries that have listened in thus far on our training, and although we've been giving this for a couple years now, almost a couple years, we're trying to do our best during today's training to make sure that we update this information. So if we ad-lib a bit during our conversation, we're going to try to make sure that we keep you up to date on what the latest developments have been over the last couple of years. So let's talk a bit about why you ought to consider green and sustainable remediation concepts on your project. Well, in our training today, we're going to show you a way to improve your stakeholder engagement process. And, in fact, we'll show you one particular site where a community was able to benefit from a trail system that was installed on top of a new cap cover. And this project was right next to a river. And in that same project, they were able to afford their community a number of educational opportunities through a collaborative effort with a local college. So that's an example of one way we're going to show you how to improve your stakeholder engagement process. And in the same way, we hope to show you a way to produce very simple and reproducible results that are going to be based on a number of quantified metrics for your particular site, and you're going to select those metrics based on what your site needs are and what your site resources are. Of course, we also hope to show you a way to reduce your impacts to emissions and greenhouse gases, as well as energy, water, and waste, and ecosystem impacts. So, on slide 6, you'll see a bit of a training roadmap here. I'm just going to take you through some very simple definitions and differentiate some definitions between green and sustainable remediation, as well as talk a little bit about our team's intentions, our products, and really the benefits to your project for implementing GSR concepts. Then I'll hand it over to Jim Colmer, and he'll take you through the planning section, which is section 2 of our technical and regulatory guidance document. You'll hear us call it the tech reg document today. And he's going to walk through common considerations and questions you ought to be asking yourself as you go through your GSR evaluation. And then Karen Holland will take you through implementation of GSR, and that's information you can find in Section 3 of our tech reg. She'll go through the life cycle phased approach to GSR implementation, as well as talk about a methodology to implementing these ideas that's a consistent approach from project to project. Now, you'll notice on this roadmap here on the left-hand side, it says GSR framework. And that's really a term we're going to use frequently today to describe both the planning and implementation sections combined. So we'll go into that a bit more in detail in just a moment. We'll break for our first question and answer session, and then we'll come back and talk about the tools for GSR and really how to apply these tools. Picking the right tool is critical, and give you some examples of best management practices as well as really simplistic tools all the way through some more advanced tools for GSR implementation. And then at the end, we'll talk about case studies, which can be found in Appendix C of our tech reg. And, of course, we're hoping to add to those case studies as time goes on. And I know currently the case study portfolio, so to speak, of the United States as a whole is really increasing. But it's happening sort of on a backlog. And so today's case studies can be found in our tech reg document, but we will be hopefully appending all of that information in the future and bringing you more and more case studies as time goes on. Alrighty, and then I'll come back and do a training wrap-up, and we'll do our second question and answer session. So with that, on the next slide here, if we can advance to slide 7, we're going to give you ITRC's green and sustainable remediation definition. And although wordy, hang with me just a moment. It is the site-specific employment of products, processes, technologies, and procedures that mitigate contaminant risk to receptors. So it's the same thing we've done all along, but we're doing this while making these same decisions in a more cognizant way of balancing community goals, economic impacts, and net environmental effects. Now, to delve into that a little bit further, what we're doing is we're building upon slide 8, this idea of basic green remediation, and according to the US EPA, that's defined as reducing environmental impacts of common investigation and remediation activities. But by itself, green remediation really just focuses in on the environmental component or the quantitative environmental component of any investigation or cleanup procedure. So So this idea is sort of a long-standing tradition in any active project management of a site. But what we wanted to do as a team with ITRC particularly is to build upon that concept. And that's really to develop more of the sustainability idea, which on slide 9 is depicted here. Again, this is that same balanced criteria of environmental, economic, and social benefits to any project. And we wanted to take on not just the green aspects of a site, but also to fold in the larger economic and social considerations that, although we consider, we need to probably be a bit more cognizant of in our day-to-day activities on a site. So on slide 10, what our team came to realize is that there's this GSR reality for our environmental industry, and that is that we always have the fundamental environmental cleanup onus to our project work, but that we want to be able to target our decisions a bit more to be cognizant, as I said, of economic and social considerations. So we're just calling this a targeted balance, and that we're never going to undermine that regulatory onus of cleanup, and we're certainly not going to supersede any sustainability decisions over our environmental cleanup job, but we are going to be more cognizant of those concepts. So we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. But in the meanwhile, on slide 11, I want to just quickly give you a bit of information in terms of background. We have both our overview document and our tech reg document, as I mentioned just a moment ago. These were both produced in 2011, and they're available for free download, of course, if you haven't already done so. We'd love for you to do that after our training today. And really what I more so hope for you to do as trainees is take that link and forward it to your colleagues as much as you can. For those that have not heard of the concept or may be new to this idea of GSR, that's going to be a very helpful link. And then, of course, it will lead them down that path of the many numerous resources that are available for free to any of our environmental industry affiliates. So on slide 12, what you're going to see here is that you are likely falling into one of our user groups. And we intend for these products then to be used by any one of the user groups. So it's really written in a very simplistic verbiage so that anybody, whether you're a regulator or you're a responsible party or a community stakeholder, no matter where you fall in this user group listing, that you're going to find this a benefit to your information and decision-making process on your site. And again, this really all just gets back very simply to better site decision-making and better information as you go through any given investigation and cleanup process. So on slide 13, what we're going to do is give you a very quick snapshot of a simple GSR evaluation. And this is really just a bulk fueling facility here in Minnesota where we had a petroleum surface impact, and we needed to correct it or mitigate it. And we had three options to doing that corrective action. We could either excavate a half a foot of material or a foot and a half and replace it with the original gravel material that was there, or cap it with asphalt or concrete. So now this is a standard decision on any given corrective action for a surface soil impact. And you can see what we've done is really, really simply laid out the three considerations of environmental, economic, and social factors for the site. We were able to quantify using one of the tools that we'll talk about later in our training. And we were able to then lay out for all of the people involved on the site, the regulators, the consultants, the stakeholders, RP, what impacts those corrective action options we're going to have on the site. So in carbon dioxide emissions and greenhouse gas totals, we were able to lay that out for them, as well as the economic information that we already had on hand from our consultants for the options. And then we also discussed what aesthetic change there might be on the site depending on which option we went with. So this was more of a qualitative social discussion, and we just simply said there's either going to be no aesthetics change if we simply replace the material with the original gravel, or in the second and third options, we're going to have a positive aesthetics change where we're going to decrease dust emissions. This particular location happened to be centered in a very small town in a rural area, and that aesthetics change happens because there's residential properties immediately surrounding this bulk fueling facility. So as an active facility, we were going to be able to decrease dust emissions for the neighboring community if we were able to cap it with either asphalt or concrete. So very simplistic things like that can really make a large impact on what was seemingly a small site and certainly could change the opinion of those involved on the site and around it. So that's just a quick snapshot of how you can lay out information gathered from a GSR evaluation. You can do this in a number of ways, but that was just sort of a teaser case study just to get you interested. On slide 14, what you're going to see is something we want you to think about as you hear today's training. It's really how GSR can be applied within your own particular organization. We want you to think about our framework, but more so we want you to think about how it can be integrated into your existing policy and guidance. We don't necessarily want folks to take away from today's training that they need to reinvent the wheel or take on an entirely new process. We just simply want people to pick and choose from a buffet of options, which is really what our framework is. It's a buffet of green and sustainable options and how those can be integrated into your existing policy or guidance and adapted to your particular needs. So if you think about your own organization, for instance, in Minnesota here, we happen to have existing petroleum remediation guidance that's really well honed. We've been working on that guidance for, decades now. And what we did is we took the ITRC products and plucked out from that buffet of options what worked for our projects and what worked for our program in particular. And then we honed that in and modified it so that it looked and sounded exactly like our existing guidance and so that we can integrate it into our reporting forms so that we're not, creating a whole nother process and so that our engaged stakeholders, whether that's consultants or RPs, aren't so afraid of taking on another layer to their investigation and cleanup. What you may experience is a little bit of pushback in terms of discussing these ideas initially from interested parties, but when you explain it to them and bring it down to a common denominator of language that they understand already for the process, they will warm up to it very, very quickly from what I've experienced. If they realize how easy it can be done and potential cost savings to a project, they may actually find themselves more interested than you would have initially thought. So then we want you to think also about how this applies to your organization's corporate or strategic plan. In Minnesota here, we have a strategic plan, particularly for sustainability. And this idea, this concept hits directly upon the goals of achieving a more sustainable organization. And that's from a state regulatory, perspective. Okay, so on slide 15, we hope again today to answer many of your GSR questions, not the least of which is why you should conduct evaluation in the first place, when you should incorporate that concept into your project, how to identify the benefits to your particular project, how to perform the exacting GSR evaluation, what tools would be appropriate for your site, what programs are applying this across the country and really internationally, and then, of course, most importantly, how to apply this directly to your specific project. So we hope to have answers for all of these questions by the end of today's training. And if you do not hear an answer to your question, please don't be shy during the Q&A sessions to chime in and ask. There is no such thing as a bad question for this concept. So on slide 16, let's jump in a bit to what we call the GSR framework. That is, as I mentioned before, comprised of the planning and implementation sections. So while this is kind of a busy diagram, all it is directly from our tech reg document. It is the planning section laid out in detail, and we'll go through these step by step in the coming minutes. And then the implementation section where you actually go through the GSR evaluation and document that thoroughly. And on the right-hand side, you're just seeing a layout there of the seven different phases that are typical to any different investigation and cleanup procedure. And that, again, comprises the GSR framework. So as you go through today's training, just think about this. We'll break it down for you. You'll notice that we're using Superfund jargon to describe the phases of investigation and cleanup. Really, that was a specific intention of our group because we had to come down to a common language for the whole document and all of our products. However, you'll find a really handy crosswalk table, as we call it, and that is a table in our document that essentially lays out the different program languages and phases of investigation and cleanup. So whether you only have experience in underground storage tanks or you only have experience in RCRA work and the Superfund language isn't necessarily your thing, you may find that that crosswalk table is very handy in case you are a bit lost as you go through the process. So on the next slide, what you're going to see is that we intended our framework to be very flexible and scalable. And again, this is something that you'll realize as you're going through the process, you can scale this thing down to a very simplistic underground storage tank site, or as I just showed you, a surface-impacted petroleum spill site, or all the way up to a multi-decade, multi-million-dollar Superfund site, where your decision-making process is going to have impacts not just to your pocketbook, but to the global environment, as we say, for years and years to come. So really, this is intended to be a very small effort if you have limited resources, all the way up to intensive, quantifiable investigation for the GSR impact. So with that, on slide 18, I'm going to hand it over to Jim Colmer then for the planning section, and he'll take you through that. Jim.
Thanks, Rebecca. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I was worried I was a little slow on the draw. Thanks, Rebecca, for the intro into GSR, and again, as Rebecca indicated, I'm going to take you through GSR planning. So with that, let's jump right into it on slide 19. Planning really is the first step in any process, and it's really no different for GSR. But what is different is each GSR project. So each site is different, or the remedial stage at which you might want to begin a GSR project is going to vary. Now, there's nothing to say that a GSR project has to start at ground zero. The framework presented here today is equally viable at the start of a GSR project as it would be during an optimization phase of a project. I think this is a key concept in ITRC's guidance documents. So when planning a GSR project, any available environmental, social, or economic components should be considered to determine those GSR aspects that might be most appropriate for your project. But it's possible that as you look at things, you may find that not all components of GSR are going to apply to your project, and that's okay. Slide 20, please. Take a look at the GSR planning graphic on this slide. These are typically the generally accepted steps in GSR planning, and in Section 2 of ITRC's TechREC document, you'll find that each step is discussed in detail. But what I'd like to emphasize to you here, again, is the flexibility of the GSR framework. Because the framework is designed to fit small or large projects, irrespective of the project phase, your GSR project planning could follow some or all of these steps. They could be performed in varying degrees, or these steps could even be performed multiple times, depending on your project needs. So over the next few slides, we're going to take a closer look at each step of the GSR planning process. But before we go on, just take the time to look again at this graphic, and I think you'll notice how similar GSR planning is to the traditional remedial planning steps you're already familiar with. And I think the point is that GSR planning doesn't need to be an extra step. It should be integrated with your normal remedial processes, such as the conceptual site model, which is on slide 21. The CSM, as we're going to call it, refer to it throughout this presentation, is discussed in the GSR planning process, is the same CSM that you're likely familiar with and have done for traditional remedial projects. It's just a description of how contaminants released at a site interact with the environment and potential human or ecological receptors. The CSM should be updated whenever there's a change in site conditions or new valid data becomes available. This type of adaptive management technique helps minimize uncertainty in the CSM and is really considered a part of GSR since the CSM forms the basis of defining an effective remedial strategy. So the CSM is not a new concept, but using it to capture relevant GSR information and potential GSR opportunities might be. For example, relevant GSR information to capture might include documenting the wind power classification area or solar potential in an area to determine the feasibility of renewable energy sources that you might be able to employ at your project. And there are other examples of relevant GSR information that you can capture into CSM, and those can be found in Section 2 of ITRC's TechREC document. Let's go to slide 22, please. GSR goals. What you're likely going to find is that GSR goals are going to vary from project to project. For example, site setting. These are the circumstances surrounding your site. If we are looking at a brownfield redevelopment project, let's say, we might consider increased economic development a GSR goal, whereas we might wish to select the reduction in water use as a goal in an arid setting. The point is to take what is important from a GSR perspective and weave it into your project goals. In other words, identify your drivers and set your goals early on to minimize potential bias into development later. Some common drivers for setting GSR goals can be regulatory policy, corporate directives, cash or recognition incentives. So if you're finding yourself at this planning stage having difficulty with setting goals, I think just take a moment to step back and evaluate what are you trying to accomplish and why are you trying to accomplish it. I would also encourage you to look at a couple of good resources for evaluating GSR goals. And the first, of course, is the ITRC Tech Reg, and another is the EPA's Green Remediation Primer, which can be found on the EPA's CLUIN website. Slide 23. Stakeholder involvement is an integral component of GSR planning and of the GSR framework as a whole. As such, it's a key consideration for sustainable remediation. The stakeholders can be any individual or group that's directly or indirectly affected by project activities. For example, stakeholders for a small UST project might only consist of a UST owner, regulator, and the consultant. Now, contrast that with a brownfield project. You might have a remediation advisory board consisting of nearby residents or even a developer. It's also possible that when you're looking at stakeholders, you'll find that some have an interest in GR or GSR and others don't. You could also find that some stakeholders are only interested in the GSR piece, such as a local or state program that provides incentives for green practices. After we've identified the stakeholders, we should engage them at various points of the project. While it might be normal to engage stakeholders in any project at some regulatory checkpoint, for stakeholder involvement to be considered part of GSR, the GSR belief is engagement should occur more frequently than what's required by a regulatory program. The thought here is that increased frequency or effort in stakeholder engagement can promote better decision-making during the remedial process. So with that, we're going to take a look at a couple examples of stakeholder involvement on slide 24. This first example highlights project communications. One way to engage stakeholders is to use monthly progress reports, and in many cases, these are going to be required by regulators anyway. So instead of creating a second summary for stakeholders other than the regulators, consider contacting your regulator to see if they would accept a restructured progress report that could be presented in a newsletter form and written in layman's terms such that everybody could understand what was being conducted and why it was being conducted. The second example I want to go over is an actual project, and this was provided by one of our ITRC instructors, and that was Nick Petruzzi at Cox Colvin. In his example, we see the wisdom of having an interactive dialogue between stakeholders. So a potential remedial alternative was proposed to address several sources of contamination in soil. Ultimately, excavation of the material exceeding risk-based cleanup levels was believed to be the best overall approach. However, this meant that the material exceeding a more conservative leaching to groundwater-based limit would be left in place. And although not a regulatory requirement, a public meeting was held since the community had expressed interest in the site. In the meeting, the remedy selection process was explained, as well as why the proposed remedy would meet remedial goals without removal of soil exceeding the leach-based limits. In addition, it was further explained that what it would mean to the community in terms of increased air emissions, truck traffic, and disruption for the marginal gain it might provide to go to a more conservative limit. The benefit of this type of stakeholder engagement is that the community had a better understanding of what was being proposed and what was going to be accomplished, which made it easier for the regulators to provide their approval on the remedial plan since the community was already on board. So the point I really want to leave you with regarding stakeholder engagement is that it's a process that can be relatively simple, and you're probably already doing some of these things normally. but just not capturing those in terms of GSR. Slide 25, please. Another step in the GSR planning process is the selection of GSR metrics, the evaluation level, and boundary conditions for your evaluation. It's probably best if you can plan these selections concurrently. It's not necessary, but it might make your life easier as you go through the process. For now, we'll focus on metrics, and we'll go over the different evaluation levels shortly. For each GSR goal you've identified for your project, the appropriate GSR metrics should be selected to track or evaluate goals. That only makes sense. So when considering which metrics are most appropriate, some things to think about are your boundary conditions. So what's the reach of your project? What's the reach of your evaluation? You might want to consider any contractual mechanisms. Is there an administrative order on the site, let's say? How about project restrictions and project funding? All of these things could influence what metrics you might select. Now, we've got a couple different types of metrics in a broad sense, and that's quantitative and qualitative metrics. Quantitative metrics tend to rely on calculations, tools, or life cycle models, while qualitative metrics are somewhat subjective and can be more difficult to capture, such as quality of life indicators can be. Here are a couple of good examples, or good sources of GSR metrics, and the first is Table 4.1 of the ITRC GSR Overview document, and the second is the Sustainable Remediation Forms, or SRFs, website where they have a metrics toolbox. Slide 26. On this slide, we show a portion of Table 4.1 from the ITRC GSR Overview document that we just talked about. The left-hand column lists some GSR metrics, and the associated aspect area of the metric is shown along the top. As shown in this table, some metrics can have multiple units like BTUs or kilowatt hours. Now, you're going to need to decide the most appropriate unit for your use when you're planning your project. Some of these metrics will represent various aspects of project activities, and some metrics, again, are going to be qualitative and some quantitative. To the right is the metrics description column. This is where you'll find how metrics might be measured and what they might represent. When considering metrics, I think it's important to note that while Table 4.1 and the SRF website are good resources for metrics, there's currently no single resource with an all-inclusive list of metrics that you might use. So you may need to do a little research if the metric example you're looking for is not at either of these locations. Slide 27. This slide introduces the three levels of performing a GSR evaluation. And later in the training, Karen and Elizabeth are going to give you a couple examples of the different levels of the GSR evaluation. So on this slide, starting with level one, which is the base condition, it's the bottom of the pyramid, this is considered the simplest approach. The objective of a level one approach is to adopt practices based on common sense, promoting resource conservation and process efficiency, without really trying to quantify their net impact on the environment, community, or economic conditions. In other words, we're simply selecting BMPs and implementing them. The middle tier is the level two evaluation. This evaluation would build on the level one best management practices and include a simple qualitative or semi-quantitative evaluation, such as those that use value judgments or basic calculators. Now, for level three evaluation is desired, it should include best management practices and a complex quantitative evaluation, such as methods that rely on life cycle assessment or footprint analysis. So, as you might imagine, the higher you go on the pyramid, the more time and resources will be needed to complete the evaluation. Slide 28. Okay, this looks like it's the last step, but it's really not the last step in GSR planning. And that's process documentation, and I say this because effective GSR documentation really should be done at the appropriate times throughout the planning and implementation process. In fact, I believe you'll find that the documentation that you prepare for a GSR project is likely going to be similar to documentation you would prepare for any other remediation project. But in a GSR project, you're going to capture and communicate your project efforts to stakeholders in terms of your GSR goals and metrics that you've set. So, for example, if your project includes, say, quarterly groundwater sampling and solid waste reduction is a GSR goal, you could design a field form in the planning stages that capture the amount of material being discarded, recycled, or reused. So how you set up your GSR project, how you plan it, can determine your GSR documentation needs. Now, in terms of documenting an overall GSR evaluation report at the end of your project, I've seen this done a couple ways. I've seen it done as a standalone GSR report, or I've also seen it as a chapter within a remediation completion report or an optimization report. If you do plan an overall GSR evaluation report, be sure to include the resources you've used, the tools, the goals you had, any metrics or barriers you might have encountered while executing your project. The purpose is that this can help with the reproducibility and verification of your GSR results. Section 3 of ITRC's tech reg has some specific examples of GSR documentation, so be sure to check that chapter out. Now, I've got one more slide, and it's a hypothetical evaluation of a GSR planning that we're going to walk through together, and that's on slide 29. One of the first things I hope you'll notice in this example is that the GSR planning steps graphic on the left are in a different order than previously presented. The purpose of this is to show the flexibility of the GSR framework. In this particular example, after consulting with the ITRC tech reg document, the project planners decided that performing the GSR steps in this order made the most sense for their project. And as you look at your own projects, you might find the same thing. So we start with the first box, stakeholder involvement step, by conducting a kickoff meeting with the owner, regulator, public official, and consultant. During that meeting, the group discussed project expectations and objectives, as well as GSR goals. During the goals discussion, it was identified that preservation of green space was very important to the community. So in addition to reducing fuel consumption, important to the owner, and reducing the generation of investigated derived waste, which was important to the regulator, minimizing green space disturbance was also established as a GSR investigation phase goal. So once the goals were established in the kickoff meeting, metrics were selected to support the GSR goals. And in this example, the project expectations, which were also set in the kickoff meeting, were aligned with a level 2 GSR evaluation, which, again, includes best management practices and a qualitative or semi-qualitative evaluation. The boundary conditions of the GSR evaluation were set to include on-site and travel-related activities only. After establishing metrics, the GSR level and boundary conditions, the remainder of the GSR planning was executed using the GSR implementation portion of the framework, which provided guidance on how to perform the level 2 evaluation and implement its results. Now, I'm between boxes 3 and 4 on this slide. Upon completion of the field work, the conceptual site model was updated, which is box 4, with the new analytical data, as well as some relevant GSR observations, such as an on-site rail spur, a nearby recycling center perhaps, and the green space that was preserved. And in this example, the documentation of GSR efforts was completed throughout the investigation phase, so it wasn't just saved to the end. And these included the best management practices that were implemented, GSR-related field logs, kickoff meeting minutes where our goals were set, and the Level 2 evaluation report. So that's a really, really quick hypothetical example of GSR planning. And on slide 30, I'm going to turn the training over to Karen Holland of Haley and Aldrich, who will walk you through the implementation phase of the GSR framework. Karen?
Thank you so much, Jim. So, as I mentioned before, GSR implementation is the second step of GSR planning in the GSR framework. It provides a life cycle phase approach and a consistent methodology regardless of the phase of remediation you might find yourself in. And so I'm going to spend a little bit more time now talking about GSR implementation. So moving on to slide 31, you'll find much more information on GSR implementation in section 3 of the tech reg document. And basically, GSR implementation provides some information on how GSR approaches may first be selected, then evaluated, and finally implemented to make sure that GSR is consistently applied throughout your remediation lifecycle. Therefore, this approach covers each remediation phase, and it also provides a flexible approach. So regardless of where you're located, the types of contamination you're dealing with, the complexities, your site-specific complexities on the site, you can use the information provided in sections through the tech reg very easily. On slide 32, these are the different phases of remediation that are covered under the GSR framework in GSR implementation. And you can find more information in section 3.1 all the way to section 3.7. And you'll recognize these different phases of remediation from investigation all the way through to closeout. On slide 33, there's a lot of opportunities to include GSR regardless of where you are in the remediation lifecycle. And again, if you look at sections through the tech reg, you'll find much more information. So for example, if you're in the investigation phase, you really want to start thinking about GSR application during planning. This might help you optimize your field investigation, for example, or even reduce mobilizations from effective planning and effective incorporation of GSR. Then during remedy evaluation selection, this is a fantastic time to start thinking about GSR again, because regardless of the remedy you ultimately select, you will have the practices and principles in place that you can implement carrying forth the remedy. Another important step is to think about GSR during operation and maintenance monitoring. And this phase might take quite a long time. So, for example, if you have an existing pump and treat system in place, that system might be running for many, many years. So if you find opportunities to reduce your sustainability impacts, over time, these will really become cumulative and quite significant. Moving on to slide 34. The great thing about this approach is it's very compatible with various existing regulatory programs. And in fact, this is an excerpt from table 3.1 in the tech reg document. And you will see for each remedial phase, information is provided as how that phase fits in to the different regulatory frameworks, from RECCRA to CERCLA to state-specific programs to LOFT. So again, all those phases of remediation that were shown on the previous slides, you can relate these back to the specific regulatory program that you're currently in. Moving on to slide 35, this is the approach that's proposed in the tech reg document for each phase of remediation. It's a four-step methodology, which includes, first of all, identifying your GSR options, performing a GSR evaluation, GSR implementation, and then finally tracking and documentation. And I'm going to lead you through each of these different steps and provide some examples so that you can see how they all tie together. On slide 36, these are some examples of GSR options. These are sustainable best management practices that you might want to consider for your remediation project. And these are just an example. They can be very diverse. But, for example, you might want to think about how you can reduce your impact on natural resources. You might think of ways to recycle or reuse different materials, and this could be anything from soil to entire buildings. There might be opportunity to reuse or to use renewable energy at the site. And you might want to consider using local resources, whether it's labor or actual materials. On slide 37, this is an excerpt from table 3.7 in the tech reg document, and it's an example of identifying GSR options during remedy construction. And the table is broken out into the three facets of sustainability, so environmental, social, and economic. And each of the tables in this section really provides you some great information on best management practices to include for the implementation of GSR. So, for example, for environmental considerations, you might want to set up an on-site recycling program for your different materials. For the social component, you might want to consider maximizing the use of local businesses. And that then ties into the economic component, which really provides economic benefits to the community from using local businesses, using local labor, and even using local resources, as I talked about before. On slide 38, we already introduced this pyramid for your GSI evaluation, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about this. So once you've identified your GSR options, the next step is to perform a GSR evaluation. And the TechReg provides a three-level approach, the first level being identifying and implementing best management practices. Level two builds on level one by implementing best management practices, but also performing a simple evaluation, and this could be a qualitative or semi-quantitative evaluation, and we'll apply some examples in a few minutes. And then level three is implementing best management practices and a more advanced evaluation. Now, it's really important before you select which level of evaluation to consider to really understand your site-specific considerations. And these could be the complexity of the site, where the site is located, what the budget is to perform this analysis. And this will help you inform which level you want to consider for your GSI evaluation. On slide 39, this is an example of a level one evaluation for operation, maintenance, and monitoring. Now, if you remember, level one is the identifying and implementation of best management practices. And some examples are provided here. These include selecting local contractors, again, minimizing mobilization where possible, engaging the local community, going above and beyond the regulations and really having meaningful discussions to make sure that the remediation and indeed the site reuse really benefits the local community as much as possible. You may want to consider using renewable energy and reducing noise, especially beyond the site boundary, again, to reduce disturbance to the local community. And then you might want to look into the future. So beyond remediation, what can you do to revitalize the land as well? On slide 40, this is an example of a level two evaluation. Now remember, this is identifying and implementing best management practices and then performing a simple evaluation. Now this is an example of a hypothetical remedy evaluation and selection. And you will see here that we have a lot of color coding and some happy and less happy faces. So we have three different potential remedies, in-situ thermal, bioremediation, and in-situ chemical oxidation. And then you have a number of different environmental, social, and economic metrics. And what we did is that we actually compared each of the remedies against each of those metrics to see which one in the circumstance was the most sustainable. So you can see line by line, and also looking at the bigger picture, that bioremediation really seems to be the best approach for this example. Now, bear this in mind, this again is very site-specific for this hypothetical example. So whereas bioremediation might be the most sustainable options for this site, things might change for other sites as well. On slide 41, this is an example of a level 3 evaluation. So now you can see that we have numerical values, and this is going to take a little bit more time to actually perform the evaluation. And Elizabeth is going to spend much more time on different tools available to perform these types of evaluation. Now, this is an example of a hypothetical investigation. And again, you can see that you have different metrics to the left. And now you have two approaches. So it's actually using the same type of investigation, but one is with best management practices and one is without. So approach number two is with your best management practices. And you can see that we have now numerical quantitative values for a number of different sustainability metrics. So again, level three is probably going to give you the most information, but it's going to be a more advanced, more quantitative, and probably more time-consuming evaluation as well. On slide 42, once you've performed your GSR options and you've done your evaluation, the next step is to do your GSR implementation. So you're taking the work that you've done and really now implementing it in the field. At this point, it's really important for you to make sure that your entire team understands the various GSR elements of the project so that they can be effectively implemented in the field. So it therefore makes sense for everyone to understand the benefits and the need for for GSR in the field. And therefore, you want to involve all your various internal and external stakeholders to the extent possible. On slide 43, this is an example of GSR implementation at the closeout phase. So again, you want to make sure that you're incorporating all the results from your GSR evaluation. And you might want to consider incorporating GSR in your procurement documents, your contractors, as well as field work plans, to make sure, again, that everyone understands the benefits of GSR and are appropriately implementing GSR practices in the field. On slide 44, this is another example of GSR implementation, and this takes place during remedy optimization. This example is actually provided in the TechReg document, and it's a very simple example that illustrates by just making one or two changes in your remediation system that you really can see some significant sustainability benefits as well as cost savings. So in this example, there was an airstrip at the site, and VOC concentrations dropped pretty significantly. And therefore, it was decided to downsize the airstripper to have a smaller motor. Now, over the life cycle of the use of this airstripper, over 1.7 million kilowatt hours of energy use were saved. And this equates to approximately 1,080 metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions. Now, putting that into context, that equates to approximately 94 homes being provided with electricity for a year. So a pretty significant reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. And then when you equate that to cost, this project will be saving approximately $168,000 worth just through that one reduction in energy consumption. So again, this is a very simple example, and there are many other examples out there. By making a simple change in your system, you'll really reap the benefits, but both in terms of sustainability and also cost. On slide 45, the last step of GSR implementation is tracking and documentation. Now, you've done some fantastic work in the field, so it's really important to document these and make sure that everyone knows about these. So you want to make sure that you're identifying your sustainability benefits, as well as tracking both your successes and lessons learned. Because, again, you want to make sure that you're incorporating GSR throughout the remediation life cycle, not just once. And so if you have some good lessons learned, these could actually be projected moving forward. And again, going back to including both your internal and your external stakeholders, it's really important to talk about GSR in your regulatory reports so that the regulators can see what fantastic GSR implementation you've done throughout your project. On slide 46, some of the documentation that you might want to include can consider what best management practices were selected. What was the level of evaluation performed? Was it level 1, 2, or 3? How GSR was actually implemented in the field? What was done to help with stakeholder collaboration? How are you tracking results? And then finally, what type of data is collected? So, for example, if you're doing a greenhouse gas emissions analysis, what background data do you need? For example, fuel use and electricity use. On slide 47, so again, to summarize GSR implementation, which forms part of your GSR framework, provides a consistent methodology, and it's a four-step approach. You first of all identify your GSR options, you perform a GSR evaluation, you implement GSR, and then you want to do some tracking and documentation. Now, again, to show how all these bits and pieces fit together, this is another example at the remedy evaluation selection phase. And now all the pieces of the puzzle are put together. So you can see on the left-hand side that you have stakeholder collaboration throughout GSR implementation. Your first step is to identify your GSR options. And so during remedy evaluation selection, you might want to consider what are your in-situ or on-site remedies that are possible. Is there an opportunity to use renewable energy? Is there an opportunity to reduce your waste, for example, soil? You then might consider doing your GSR evaluation. And in this case, a level 3 analysis was performed, so a more quantitative life cycle assessment approach was taken for a number of different environmental, social, and economic metrics. Then for GSR implementation, in this example, a remedy was selected that reduced your environmental footprint, was acceptable to all the stakeholders, and achieved economic goals. So not only economic goals in terms of the cost of the project, but also a remedy that would boost the local economy as well. And then finally, with tracking documentation, at this point, you want to make sure that you're monitoring your GSR implementation and that you communicate your results, both verbally through community engagement, as well as in regulatory documents. And this leads to slide 49, which is our first Q&A session.
Thank you, Karen. For our simulcast audience, you can send in questions using the orange question mark button at the top of the slides. For our phone line audience, if you'd like to ask questions out loud, you are welcome to do that. You need to unmute your phone at your location, and in our system, you need to select #6 to unmute in our system. So unmute the phone at your location and #6 to unmute in our conference call system. Do we have any questions to start from the phone line audience? We have a question that from the simulcast that refers to slide 13. So if you're in the Cluin version, along the left are a list of slide numbers, and you can scroll up that list and select slide 13 to quickly jump back to that slide. This is from VinCat. The economic cost that was shown in slide 13, was it the actual project cost or cost savings?
Oh, this is Rebecca from Minnesota. It was actually the corrective action portion of the overall project budget. So just for those particular corrective action options, those were the estimated costs. So not necessarily the economic savings, rather the cost to do the corrective action.
VinCat also asked about slide 41. Can you explain how the local economic benefits are being evaluated in slide 41?
Hi, this is Karen. Yes, it's this is actually more generic. There's a number of ways to measure the boost, as I mentioned. You can consider using local businesses, so using local contractors to perform the work, using local hotels, using local restaurants when you have contractors or you're doing work at a facility, finding ways of using local workers to perform various activities as well, and using local materials, which therefore, you know, again, going down the supply chain, you might be looking at providing more local employment for those local manufacturing businesses.
Thank you. Do you have any questions from the phone line audience? I'd like to remind everyone on the call, on our last slide, we have a link to our feedback form. If you do have to leave before we wrap up today, please take just a few minutes to give us your feedback. We really do use that information. If you are typing in a question, please continue. We'll try to get to that in the second question and answer break. But for now, we are out of simulcast questions, so let's continue on with the second half of our training class. And on slide 50, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Elizabeth Hawley at Arcadis. Elizabeth?
Thank you, Juliana. So we're going to move on with this next section of the training, and that's really focused on tools. And we're using the word tools to, as a general term, to include spreadsheets and software packages and flowcharts and all these other types of materials that can help us decide which practices are most green or most sustainable for our sites. And the main purpose of this section of the training is really to orient you to types of tools that have already been developed, either by environmental practitioners or even by other industries that can be adapted for this task. So that's kind of our main focus. And on slide 51, because we're going to be measuring greenness or sustainability with these tools, we need to be clear what it is that we're measuring. So that's the GSR metrics that we've already selected for our site. And Jim already walked through the process of selecting GSR goals and then GSR metrics so that we can you know, what we're going to measure to determine whether or not we've achieved those goals. So the key point here is not letting the software programs dictate what the goals are and what you're measuring, but doing that in reverse, first figuring out what's important at your site and then looking for a tool that's going to help you assess those parameters. And on slide 52, it's also, Jim talked a lot about including stakeholders in the process of setting GSR goals and metrics. And that's really because these stakeholders can come to the table with really different values. I'm just showing some examples here on slide 52. And the metrics that we select and incorporate into our tools need to reflect those stakeholder values. So we need to really reach out to different stakeholders, find out what it is we care about, and then incorporate that into the analysis. Otherwise, the outcome of the evaluation may not be, you know, we may not be answering the right questions. It may not be acceptable to all of the different parties. So this whole process of involving stakeholders, I wanted to underscore again how important that is. People can get really excited about GSR, and it can be a real positive image or notion that brings people with really different interests together at the same table. And it's also an opportunity for people to be more aware of your project and make new connections and provide a real opportunity to learn and grow trust and communication. And we saw that definitely in the distribution of people on our ICRC team. We not just have state regulators, but also federal regulators. We had DOE representatives, people from Army, Navy, Air Force, EPA, and then a variety of different industrial stakeholders, academics, consultants, and we see that also a lot in the Sustainable Remediation Forum meetings as well, where we are attracting people from other overlapping disciplines. On slide 53, another thing to think about before just selecting a GSR tool is the boundaries that you've set, both in space and time, for evaluating each of the different metrics. And this is really just to emphasize that the way that we define these boundaries can make a big difference in the results. And so we need to consider questions like, are we just looking at on-site impacts and actual, for example, energy that's used on-site as part of our treatment system? Or if we're also thinking about transportation of materials to and from the site and the impacts associated with that. And in some cases, we're thinking not just locally but more globally, and going back in time to include some of the impacts of, you know, off-site impacts, such as, you know, materials used during manufacturing of the different products. So we just need to consider these questions before selecting a tool and clearly document our assumptions and choose a tool that's aligned with these boundaries. And on slide 54, so this is just to summarize the considerations when you're selecting a tool, or in some cases maybe you'd be reviewing someone else's use of a tool. We already discussed we wanted to pick a tool that's aligned with the site-specific goals and metrics. We also want to consider scope, budget, and the key purpose of the GSR evaluation. And also the amount of site data that's available. So some tools have site-specific, technology-specific modules that are built in. That's another consideration. And then the regulatory cleanup program might also be important. So some states or federal programs have their own tools that they're comfortable with already. And there's really no one industry standard or certification that's available yet for these tools. So our ICRC team was not endorsing any particular tool, and in our tech reg guidance document, we just provide an overview of different tools that are out there and orient you to how they are used in the evaluation process. And then in our second document that the team produced, the overview document, in Appendix A, there's a long list of all of the tools that are available and kind of a basic comparison of one to another. On slide 55, both Karen and Jim mentioned the three different levels of GSR analysis. We're looking at this as a scalable effort, so it's doing what you can and what makes sense in the context of the site. and using this pyramid shape to describe how often each of these different levels of evaluation would be used. So most people would be using level one with best management practices. You'd want to pick a tool that's aligned with that, the level of complexity that you're going into in the evaluation. And then more advanced tools are going to be requiring more site-specific data, so keep that in mind as well. On slide 56, I'm just showing a comparison of the pros and cons of using these different GSR levels. And the first thing to note is that all three of them are including best management practices, so you're going to be looking for tools that will help you with that. They're simple, they're cost-effective, they're relatively easy to implement. So some examples, maybe, you know, just common sense things like turning off idling truck engines at a job site if you're doing excavation, off-site disposal, or selecting local contractors for site work and having that worked into your contracting requirements, because that would feed back to the local economy. And then if you want to evaluate trade-offs, one remedial approach versus another, such as if one approach generates less waste but requires more energy, you know, is that greener or more sustainable overall? If you're going to be evaluating multiple metrics like that, you would need to use a level two or level three evaluation. And level three would be typically qualitative or semi-quantitative, just using simple math such as, you know, energy required per pound of contaminant removed, that type of a comparison. And level three would involve more advanced tools and is typically quantitative. And so for those tools, there may be some training required to get up to speed with them, and these would also require more site-specific data, so you might have to spend a day or two gathering information as inputs to those tools. Moving on to slide 657. This next set of slides here is going to just provide some examples of tools that are out there that can be used for each of the different levels of evaluation. And as Karen mentioned, the best management practices, or BMPs, have been described in several different references that are published by SURF, ASTM, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And these go beyond just the best management practices for environmental considerations. There's also some for social and economic considerations as well. And we have links to these tools on our links to additional resources section of the CLUIN training website. We can walk through that at the end of this presentation. And then there are several states that have developed tools that encourage the use of best management practices. Illinois has a greener cleanups matrix, and Minnesota has a toolkit for greener practices. And then shown on slide 57 is an example of an EPA fact sheet that EPA has published a variety of fact sheets of best management practices for different remediation technologies. So these are all posted on the CLUIN website under green remediation. And I think over time, as we're doing more in-depth level two and level three evaluations, we'll probably see the development of more lessons learned, and kind of refine our common sense and develop more best management practices. And another point that I wanted to make here is just that this is technology-specific and site-specific. This is not useful for comparing. This is not a way of deciding a best available technology. So we discussed this as a team and decided there's really no technology that you could label as more green or more sustainable. And we'll see some examples of that later on in the case studies. So on slide 58, this is just an example of a level 2 GSR evaluation tool. And it's a spreadsheet type approach that is based on the Green Remediation Evaluation Matrix, which was developed here in California by the Department of Toxic Substances Control. So this tool, in this spreadsheet, you're basically listing all of the different metrics in the spreadsheet. And in the DTSC spreadsheet, they call those stressors, but it's really the same idea. And then for each of the metrics, you'd evaluate for your remedial alternatives whether or not the the metric is relevant, and then give it some type of score, such as 1 through 3 or 1 through 10 or high, medium, low, just some sort of qualitative scoring to differentiate what you think are the impacts on that metric of the different remedial alternatives. So in this hypothetical example in the table, I'm using a lower score to mean that it's better from a GSR perspective. And so if you're just looking at the total scores, option 2 would be favored. And then a twist on this type of approach would be to add in another column that designates the relative importance of each of the different metrics. And that can help you with weighting the metrics unequally. So if you're in an area where land reuse is especially important, maybe it's a vibrant downtown area, and land stagnation is really more important to you than any of these other metrics, so you could weight that metric more heavily and then calculate a weighted total. And in that scenario, then options 1 and 2 would be roughly equivalent. So just going through this exercise, you can see there's possibility for a lot of discussion around these rankings, and you might have several different iterations. But just maybe being in the process and working through it with your stakeholder can yield some new insights. And in the end, you have this simple table that could also be the basis for documenting the GSR evaluation. On slide 59, there's a number of different level 3 tools that are described in section 4.4 of our tech reg guidance document. We talk about carbon footprint calculators that are out there, some remedy footprint tools, and I'm going to walk through two examples of those, focusing on the ones that are free and publicly available and have been commonly used. And then I'm also going to touch just briefly on life cycle assessment tools. So slide 60, the first of these remedy footprint tools that has been developed is the Sustainable Remediation Tool, or SRT. And this was developed by GSI Environmental on behalf of the Air Force. The link at the bottom of the page is in the process of being updated, so if you go to our links to additional resources section of the CLUIN website, you can just get a direct download to the latest version of the tool. And this is a spreadsheet-based model. It's in Excel that can be used for either remedy selection or for optimizing an existing remedy. So there's two choices for level of detail as well, whether you're looking at a more conceptual approach or if you have maybe an existing remedy and a lot of site-specific data that you can use. In general, it's a modular approach to estimating GSR impacts. So there's modules that correspond to 8 different technologies in the last version of the tool, but those are being updated as time goes on. And the tool can be used to track a number of different metrics. I'm listing just a few on slide 60 here. And another feature of this SRT tool is that there's a stakeholder scoring matrix, so you can use that to take each of the different stakeholders' weightings for the importance of different metrics, and then combine that to come up with the group's collective idea and develop an overall score. So that can be a helpful feature of the tool as well. On slide 61 is just a screenshot that shows the kind of user interface the SRT has and the questions and prompts to the user to input the basic assumptions or site-specific data. And on slide 62, this is just showing typical results from SRT. Their results come out in a table, and it just compares for each of the different GSR metrics for each remedial alternative or technology. So in this case, we're comparing pump and treat versus enhanced bioremediation, and the metrics we're looking at include air emissions, total energy consumed, and more. This is just a snapshot of the larger table. And moving on to slide 63, the second tool that it has also been developed for remedy footprint evaluation, it's free and it's publicly available, is SiteWise. And this was developed by Battelle on behalf of the Navy and Army Corps of Engineers. SiteWise is also an Excel-based spreadsheet tool, and each of the spreadsheets corresponds to a stage in remedial action. So you might use just one of them, like long-term monitoring, if that's the section of your project that you're focused on, or you might end up using multiple spreadsheets and then summing the impacts to get life cycle impacts over the life of your project. And then within each spreadsheet, there's a place to track the footprint associated with a variety of different activities that go on during that phase. So there's materials, transportation, equipment, waste handling. And SiteWise is was also can be downloaded for free. The website link here is, I guess, also under revision. So the link on our links to additional resources page takes you directly to the SURF website. And you can download a copy of the latest version of SiteWise there. And we'll update that link when the when it's updated on the Navy's website as well. You can also download an online training webinar and a user manual that goes along with this tool. On slide 64, this is just showing, again, the user interface for SiteWise. So this is where you'd be inputting all of the different materials that were used for site remediation, either well material, construction materials, treatment chemicals, just some examples here shown on the left. And on slide 65, again, the results from SiteWise are populated into a table very similar to SRT. SiteWise also gives you a graphical summary of the different metrics. So this bottom graph on slide 65 just shows the metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions that were associated with each of the remedial alternatives. And there's been a recent publication by CERTIP, ESTCP, they've published the results of doing a basically a demonstration validation of SRT and SiteWise and benchmarking the results from these tools against a life cycle assessment tool, SEMA Pro. So there's also a link to that report. You can either access it on the ESTCP website or you can go to the links to additional resources section of the CLUIN training website. On slide 66, again, this is just two examples, but there's a number of other methodologies and tools that are available and have been developed either by private industry or universities or federal government, others. I would refer you to Appendix A of the overview document published by ITRC for a more comprehensive list. And some of these tools provide more technology-specific modules that are not available in SiteWise or SRT, and others were set up to make it easier to track GSR impacts associated with a portfolio of different sites or with a focus on green technologies and biofuels and renewable energy, something like that. So there are reasons to look into other tools as well as these two that we've selected to discuss in this presentation. On slide 67, I just wanted to quickly mention the LCA process and available tools. If you're familiar with LCA, you're probably thinking, why don't we just use the life cycle assessment tools for GSR? So some examples would be SEMA Pro, which was developed by Product Ecology Consultants, and GABI is another tool that was developed by PE International in Germany. And both of those tools use they evaluate a wide range of different metrics. They pull information from a number of different underlying emissions inventory databases, and they give you several different methods for impact assessment as well. If you're sort of new to LCA but are interested in the idea, it's a very robust, established method. This slide just outlines the steps in the LCA process, and there's a really great introduction to LCA that well, you can also read about it in our TechRite guidance document, but there's a recent article that was published by the Sustainable Remediation Forum in a summer 2011 issue of Remediation Journal, so I would refer you to that as a good starting point. Slide 68. So some of these tools have built-in methods that help you weight and score different alternatives and come up with an overall GSR score for each of the different remedial options. So that can be really helpful. You can score each of the remedial options and then just compare the resulting scores. but how, like, what are the tools doing? And that process can be a little mysterious. So I just want to mention kind of how those tools are doing the comparison. Typically, they are asking the user for inputting the relative importance of each of the different metrics. So some metrics might be more important than others, as we've talked about. That's kind of a site-specific decision. It might depend on the site setting or on the stakeholder group's values. And then the tools are taking all of the different units and quantities in different ranges, sometimes in different orders of magnitude, and converting everything either to a common denominator, like dollars, or normalizing everything to a common unitless range, like mapping it to a 0 to 1 or 1 to 100 using the maximum and minimum values in that range, or using the mean and standard deviation. So there's really no perfect approach for doing this comparison. There's some uncertainty that's introduced in this overall, coming up with this overall score. But it's one way that we can develop that overall score for each remedy. And some of the tools give you several different options for doing this normalization approach. And so in those cases, you can kind of experiment with the different weighting methods and see how much the result changes or whether that impacts the overall outcome. On slide 69, I just wanted to summarize kind of important points about conducting a GSR evaluation. The first would be using best management practices. Those are simple. They're relatively easy to implement. And just to emphasize the benefits of using them at project sites, ITRC has included best management practices in all three levels of GSR evaluation. The number two take-home point would be selecting the simplest level of evaluation that's needed for your site. We definitely want GSR to be used more in projects, and we recognize that it makes sense to keep it, you know, make sure that it's scalable. And then, as both Jim and Karen mentioned, it's really important to involve stakeholders, including regulators and maybe stakeholders who may only be interested in the GSR process, bringing them in and taking their considerations or their values into consideration. And then finally, just because there's a broad range of tools that are available and no real industry standard, we're still rather relatively new in comparing the use of different tools and how these compare to each other, it's really important to conduct an evaluation of uncertainty or sensitivity in results to changes in key assumptions. So it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be a whole sensitivity analysis. It might be just as simple as maybe changing the relative weighting of the different metrics and seeing if the results are the same or if your results are really sensitive to particular assumptions. And then finally, just making sure that the process is transparent and that you're documenting your assumptions. And if you're a state regulator or someone else who's reviewing a GSR analysis, making sure that you understand how the analysis was conducted and that you're requesting the appropriate documentation. And so with that, on slide 70, I'd like to turn it over to the next presenter, who is Maria Watt of CDM Smith, and she's going to show you how everything fits together with some case studies.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Today I'm going to present three case studies that are located in Appendix C of the tech regs. There are many more case studies there, so we definitely encourage you to take a look at all the case studies within Appendix C. Moving on to slide 71, the three case studies that we selected, we picked from a wide variety of regulatory frameworks as well as different phases of the remediation. And we tried to pick a level 1 GSR, a level 2 GSR, and a level 3 GSR. For example, our first case study is a level 1 GSR, which is in a Superfund regulatory framework, which is very stringent regulatory framework in the optimization phase. Our second case study is a level 2 GSR on a RCRA site that the GSR was implemented through site assessment all the way through design and construction. Our third case study was a level 3 GSR on a brownfields redevelopment site where best management practices were not only implemented in the site assessment phase, but we also did a level 3 quantitative evaluation and compared both the site-wise tool to the SRT tool. Moving on to slide 72, our first case study is a level 1 GSR case study that involved best management practices on a former refinery site. This was done during the optimization phase when there were no formal guidance documents developed at that time. So just using best management practices, good judgment on how we can lower our impact from both a social, environmental, and economic framework was looked at. Some of the metrics that were looked at were energy consumption, ecological diversity, and community benefits. On slide 73, the setting here was a Superfund site in New York, Region 2. The former refinery site had a lot of hydrocarbon impact on groundwater and soil. One of the remediation drivers was the local downgradient river, which was a sensitive receptor. The existing remedy, which was in the rod, included a pump and treat system where the effluent was treated with carbon. Also, there was a cap over the landfill area, which was fenced off and capped, and created a barrier for the local community and the local college to the river and the waterfront. During remedy optimization, they basically conducted a lot of stakeholder outreach to determine how can we look at this and optimize this remedy. So with some stakeholder input, they determined that really changing the remedy to a constructed wetlands treatment as opposed to a carbon treatment system would be beneficial, as well as looking at the cap design and seeing if there was any way to optimize that, and looking at the triple bottom line, how can we really connect the local community to not only the waterfront, but really reuse the property in a beneficial way for not only the local community, but the adjacent college. Moving on to slide 74, this is a picture of the cap before optimization. As you can see, it was fenced off. It created a barrier that really prevented the community from accessing the waterfront, as well as accessing and reusing the site. During the optimization phase, really taking out the turf grass, taking off the fence, and creating natural habitats, native grasses, hiking trails, and bird stations, and really creating an outdoor educational center for the local students was a tremendous benefit and reuse of this property that only served as a barrier previously. Moving on to slide 75, some of the significant GSR elements were from an environmental standpoint, the actual treatment using an in-situ treatment with a constructed wetlands was actually much more sustainable in the long run. You reduce carbon usage, you reduce energy consumption, you're creating habitat, ecological habitat, not only for waterfowl, but all types of habitat. From a social standpoint, you're not only connecting that local community and the student body to the waterfront, but creating hiking trails, creating an educational center, so it was really a win-win. And reducing all that carbon usage and energy consumption directly resulted in energy and cost savings. So it was a win-win on all three fronts. Moving on to slide 76, some of the benefits, as I've said, the wetlands really reduced the carbon usage, the energy consumption. The communication and stakeholder outreach really benefited the relationship between the community, the college, and the site owner, really connecting those populations to the natural environment increases the quality of life, and there's just a whole host of improved educational opportunities now that the site is beneficially reused. Some of the challenges to incorporating GSR, especially at this early stage, Being a Superfund site, a more rigid regulatory environment, getting the stakeholders involved was critical in getting everyone, including the agencies, the local community, and the local college, to really see how can we modify this remedy. And usually a ROD amendment is very difficult to achieve. So having everyone on the same page and brainstorming, they were able to get this through as an explanation of significant differences rather than a ROD amendment. And having everyone on board and stakeholder involvement up front was critical in achieving this. Therefore, the lesson learned is really get your stakeholders involved up front. Get them on board with the vision, and everything runs much more smoothly, regardless of the regulatory environment involved. Moving on to slide 77, our second case study is a RCRA site, and it's a level 2 GSR evaluation, which not only includes qualitative best management practices, but also some basic quantitative assessments that were implemented during the remedy selection. The GSR scope included best management practices applied through the site assessment phase, as well as some quantitative analysis in the remedy selection, design, and construction. Some of the GSR metrics evaluated were CO2 emissions, waste management reuse, consumption of resources, community benefits, and corporate sustainability goals. Corporate sustainability goals are becoming increasingly more important as larger companies look to brand themselves as really an assistant to the local community and to really better the relations with not only the local communities, their clientele, and their consumers. So this is a growing brand image recognition, and really sustainability ties right into that. On slide 78, this RCRA site was a state RCRA program. It was this site was impacted with a whole host of VOCs, semi-volatile organics. The remediation driver here was a sole source aquifer, which the community in the region really needed to protect. The remedy selected here was excavation of the source area. And some of the other remediations considered were ex-situ thermal treatment and in-situ ERH. As Elizabeth was saying, we were very careful not to determine any one technology as more green or sustainable, because it really depends on site-specific conditions. And a whole host of different factors come into play when you're measuring the life cycle of a remedial approach. As can be seen on the next slide, 79, excavation here really had the lowest CO2 emissions. And that might have been because of the location of where material was being disposed. If you have something very far away, you know, that CO2 emissions is going to increase. So site-specific factors are critical to evaluate whether that overall remedial approach is more sustainable. On the social end, really getting buy-in from the local community in terms of directing truck traffic, reducing idling, was critical in making this evaluation and this remedial approach more sustainable. On the economic side, really getting in and removing the waste and remediating the site quickly definitely significantly had a cost impact and reduced overall costs. Moving on to slide 80, in summary on this RCRA site, the benefits were reduced energy consumption and CO2 emissions, and positive relationships with the stakeholder and increased brand image for this firm. Some of the challenges to implementing GSR were not only selecting the right GSR approach, but also weighing the different metrics. Is schedule more important than CO2 emissions? And evaluating the relative importance of the different metrics can be difficult. And you really need to look at that on a site-specific. But as I said, as years go on, brand image is becoming much more important. We are hoping that more incentives, as time goes on, are created to implement GSR. Some of the lessons... ...the contractor, why no-idling laws are really beneficial, and really educating not only the contractor but the stakeholder on some of the benefits of these GSR practices. Moving on to slide 81 is our third case study. This is a brownfield site in New Jersey, and it's a level 3 since we did the advanced quantitative analysis using both site-wide and SRT. The GSR scope was applied from site assessment through remedy selection, and the GSR metrics were energy consumption, air emissions, water, accident risk, and cost savings. The GSR boundaries here on both tools really looked at a cradle-to-grave approach, which means looking at the impact of actually manufacturing the carbon that's needed for a pump-and-treat system or manufacturing some of the consumables. So looking at that, especially in an oxidant, you know, looking at oxidant manufacturing, it has a big impact. So looking at the life cycle is critical, and the cradle to grave life cycle impacts are real important. This site is, as you can see from the picture, it's a landfill site right adjacent to the Delaware River. So it, again, created a barrier from the local community being connected to the waterfront and the ecological habitat. Moving on to slide 82, this brownfield site was in New Jersey on the Delaware River. The remediation driver was redevelopment. The Kroc Center had a significant amount of funds that they were willing to help revitalize Camden, New Jersey, but it had a 2-year limit on it, so those funds had to be used within 2 years or they no longer would be available. So characterization, remediation, and construction of the Civic Center had to be done within a 2-year period. Therefore, schedule really was an important metric to meet and the economy of making this project move was utilizing those funding sources in a timely manner. On slide 83, some of the significant GSR elements or from an environmental, we use a triad approach, which expedited the delineation of the contamination. We looked at using biofuels for heavy equipment. Heavy equipment, it does have a huge impact on carbon emissions. We looked at the footprint tools and compared them to see which one was really more appropriate for this site. We also looked at the social aspects, the redevelopment by providing the Civic Center, which had babysitting facilities, athletic facilities, to try and revitalize the area was a critical component of this GSR evaluation. Some of the economic concerns was leveraging those funds within that 2-year period so that the Civic Center could be constructed within 2 years and provide the necessary resources to revitalize that community. Moving on to slide 84, this is a sample output of site-wise. And as you could see, equipment usage does have a big impact. So you really need to look at site-specific parameters to determine which remedial approach is more sustainable. Not technology, but remedial approach for that site. What might be more sustainable, excavation might be more sustainable on one site, but might be a lot less sustainable on another site. So you really need to look at the site-specific remedial approach. On slide 85, some of the benefits here are that the triad process was used, which expedited the investigation, the remediation, and redevelopment. The community institutions were strengthened by construction of that Civic Center and providing the daycare center and the athletic fields for the youth in the area. The air emissions were reduced, and the project overall catalyzed the neighborhood redevelopment. Some of Some of the challenges on the GSR were weighting the different social, economic, and environmental metrics, which ones are more important. Is redevelopment on a local community more important than CO2 emissions for the region? Some of the lessons learned are looking at the two different tools, and in particular, site-wise, you really do need some conceptual design parameters to plug into those different actions, whereas SRT is a little more general, so you don't need as detailed information. So looking at your use of the tool and the type of information you have is critical in selecting the right tool for your site. Moving on to slide 86, some of the key lessons from the case studies are that GSR process can be very flexible, being implemented not only from a brownfields redevelopment, but all the way up to a Superfund cleanup. You can implement the GSR in any phase of the remediation, from a site assessment through remedy selection, design and construction, and optimization. Communication with the stakeholders is critical to the success. Each one of these projects had really approached all the stakeholders up front, and that's how they were able to implement these GSR practices and really create a successful project outcomes. Some of the assumptions and evaluation methods are new, and users must understand the assumptions and the tools and what they can do for you and what kind of information you need for each tool. So those are critical in looking and selecting the appropriate tool. But overall, looking at the holistic approach and the life cycle impacts on any remedial strategy is critical in creating and executing a successful project. Now I'd like to turn this over back to Rebecca, who will provide a wrap-up for this training module.
Okay, so here we are on slide 87. We're going to quickly wrap up today's training by just sort of zooming out and talking about GSR as a concept to bring you back out to the overall idea. So on slide 88, quickly, we're just going to look at a depiction here of what we're considering from the ITRC perspective as the maturation or growth of the GSR concept in the industry. On this depiction here that we've borrowed from the International Union of Conservation of Nature from 2006, we just adapted it to our concept, and really what you're seeing there on the left is the theory of GSR and sustainability, what we're experiencing currently in the present, which is that environmental onus of cleanup and investigation and integrating those economic and social factors to a greater degree and really blowing those out to the greatest potential possible so that we can continue to grow these ideas to a greater degree to the point that it becomes second nature and we consider this, again, that passe concept that this is just now the way we do business. On slide 89, we're also seeing this growth in terms of integration into guidance thus far, more on a user-defined voluntary basis of these considerations. And now we're, with time and with more case studies, starting to see more regulatory recommended GSR guidance in various states. It varies greatly, really, across the country, east to west and north to south. What we're hoping, though, is that we can anticipate a policy discussion eventually with our policymakers to integrate these and make them more of a requirement so that we start integrating it at a minimum best management practices into all contract language. And you've heard a great deal about that in today's training. If you would like to have more of a discussion on that policy end and need some ideas from us, certainly don't be shy and either email or pick up the phone and contact any one of the trainers from today. Or ITRC in general, they'll get you to us and we can help you do that. Many of us have already done that in standard contracts as well as state contracts. So on slide 90, we always have to tip our hat to the other folks working with this concept across the country and internationally. And you've heard much about these organizations in today's training. This is just simply a listing of some of the products that they've developed, and we have to thank them for their efforts, of course. Without that, we would not be where we are with this idea and concept and continuing to grow it forward. On slide 91, we would like to conclude from the team's perspective by, encouraging you to really make the GSR framework your own. Tailor it to your needs. Pick what you need out of that buffet. Don't forget it can be used on small scale all the way up to really mega scale projects. And we believe that that potential for integration is limitless. So whether you are coming from an organization that is working on this from a grassroots bottom-up approach or a top-down policy perspective, we know that we can integrate this concept no matter where you are. So be sure to share your successes and your challenges with us as you go forward from today's training. We certainly are more than happy to help you with any of the challenges you're encountering, and certainly would love to hear all about the case studies you may be working on. Even if they're not complete, we certainly like to share information on these ideas. So with that, I'll hand it back to Juliana on slide 92.
Thanks, Rebecca. We are going to have plenty of time for questions from the audience, so if you'd like to start sending in questions using that orange question mark button, you are welcome to do so. Before we get to questions, I do want to take you to our links to additional resources and the feedback form. So you're welcome to select either section of that slide. If you do go to the links page first under the Clue and Sun, the third button down takes you over to the feedback, and we do look for everyone on today's call to give us your feedback. On the links page, the first item, download today's IPRC training, that's what's going to allow you to download the presentation that you've seen during today's training class. In addition to what's been on the slides in the clue-in version, there's more information available in the notes section of this downloaded version. We introduced ITRC's technical and regulatory guidance document, Green and Sustainable Remediation, a Practical Framework, during today's training class. We do encourage you to visit the ITRC website where you can download that. So this next item takes you over to the ITRC website where you can download a PDF of the document. Also, the Green Sustainable Remediation's overview document, State of Science and Practice, is available. We've referred to a few other ITRC projects during today's training, and we've listed some of those on in section one of our links, and there are many more items available on the ITRC website. So I encourage you to look at the website. For most documents, there's an associated training that's available in archives, so you don't need to wait till the next offering. You can listen to an archive of a past offering of a training. In section two, we have some additional online resources, and you are welcome to share these resources. Our links page will continue to be available for some of the tools that we've talked about during today's training class. This is a great way to find those tools. We now want to take time to answer questions from our audience. So for the simulcast audience, it's back on the slides. It's that orange question mark button that allows you to send in questions. For the phone line audience, if you'd like to send questions that way, you are welcome to. You can also ask questions out loud. So unmute your phone at your location. Select pound 6 to unmute in our system. That's pound 6 to unmute. Do you have any questions to start from the phone line audience? From the simulcast, we have a question. What is a triad?
This is Maria Watt. A triad investigation is where you go in with a tool where you can collect real-time data on delineating the extent of contamination so that each day you get more data from the field and can really delineate the entire site in one mobilization, which really expedites the delineation, prevents having to mob and remob, and really expedites the entire process.
And this is Juliana. ITRC does have a document on triad. It's under our sampling characterization and monitoring section. If you have any trouble finding it, let me know. We have a document and an associated internet-based training that will give you a lot more information about the triad approach. From Angela, can you provide some perspective on the synergies of this program and framework to the two new ASTM standards? Can you also provide your thoughts on the states and EPA regions' reception, use, and support of using the ASTM standards?
This is Rebecca. I can take a stab at that, unless we have another trainer that wants to answer.
No, go ahead, Rebecca.
Okay. Well, the ASTM two standards that are out, both the Sustainable Guide and now the Greener Cleanup Guide, are both ready and able to be downloaded at any time now, so I encourage everybody to go check them out. What we've done is we've really helped work in concert with between ITRC and ASTM, as well as SWAMO and SURF. All of these organizations have really had a lot of crossover in terms of contributors and editors to the product. So what we've done is try to make these things not just sound alike, but read alike and really reference each other. This is, of course, as a concept developing with time. So what you may see here from an introduction perspective from the ITRC training, you can certainly enhance then with more detail that can be found now in the ASTM documents. I can give you an example of support. EPA has just fully published the support letter from Maddie Stanislaus, the assistant administrator for EPA's AUGUR, and he has fully published a support statement encouraging the use of ASTM's guides. So they are certainly supporting the use of those guides. They, of course, selected ASTM as the standard development organization to create them. So by all means, they're encouraging the use of it. And then, of course, you can use the ITRC products as an overall framework of how to integrate those ideas across the board into all phases of your investigation and cleanup. So there's sort of a cross, I would say it's a sinuous process, so to speak. You can use all of the products and integrate them to whatever degree your organization allows. It's more, I think, of a personal organization's task to figure out which parts are going to work for them. And being able to reference the ASTM guide is extremely helpful in doing so, because it gives credibility and it helps us develop an ability to say that this was done in accordance with a standard that has gone through rigorous review and peer review and the entire ASTM process. Our ITRC products have gone through a very similar process. So it's really just more of multiple tools to pull from in order to integrate these ideas. In Minnesota here, we have integrated the ITRC concepts and framework as well as the reporting requirements that the ASTM documents reference. So there's really great cross support throughout these organizations. Maria, did you want to add?
No, actually, what Rebecca said, yeah, is exactly straight on. One of the additional elements that, especially the ASTM Green Cleanup document, it gives a best management practice spreadsheet tool that almost dives a little bit deeper into that one leg of the triple bottom line. So the products really work in synergy. So really it all depends on what you're looking for.
Thank you. From Ed, what was the 2011 journal again that had the article about the life cycle assessment portion of GSR?
Yeah, this is Elizabeth. So that's a remediation journal article. It's published in summer 2011. And I believe if you go to the links to additional resources, I'm doing that right now, that we have a direct link to. You can also download it on the SURF website, Sustainable Remediation Forum, and we have a link to the Sustainable Remediation Forum's website on our links to additional resources website. And if you want to send an email in to, I guess you can email me directly. I can send you the link, or I can also follow up with you afterwards through Juliana.
As a tie-in to the last question, this is kind of an example, really, of the crossover that we see. Not only are many of our ITRC members on the ASTM committees, and also the SURF committees, but the remediation journal editor John Simon of NARIS Advisors was one of the leads on the latest, the green ASTM technical committee or task group. So there's a great deal of crossover. If you do need any references or any folks to connect with more local to your state, we certainly probably have a point of contact for you if you should need that.
Thanks, Rebecca. I was going to point out on slide 4, you can see today's trainers with their contact information. Also on the main training page, we have email addresses. So if you need to get in contact with someone, You're welcome to email training at itrcweb.org, and I will pass it on, or you can go directly using slide 4 in the main training page. Do we have any questions from our phone line audience? Remember, #6 to unmute. I would like to remind everyone on the call, we really do use your feedback and appreciate if you just take a few minutes at the end of today's class to fill out that feedback form. At the end of the feedback form, you can select a checkbox, and that will allow you to get an email that will confirm that you provided feedback. So that's something that some people use to help with their continuing education needs. So that's something to keep in mind, that by giving feedback, you get an email in exchange. Also, more information about ITRC is available on the ITRC website, which is www.itrcweb.org. We're out of simulcast questions, and it doesn't sound like we have any phone line questions, so we'll go ahead and wrap up early. I'd like to thank our trainers and our participants for joining us today. Remember, more information on the ITRC website, www.itrcweb.org, and we really need your feedback, so please fill out the feedback form. Thanks again for joining us, and have a great day.